This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
There was a little bit of a kerfuffle over the weekend when basically a lot of people watched Najib Razak attempt to walk out of an interview because he didn't like the questions he was being asked. He thought he was there to talk about his legacy, about the economy, and not there to answer questions about the charges that have been leveled at him.
Yeah, well, Lynn, you know, I'll walk out right now if we're not going to be talking about that. You know,
just am I not like, being fair to you?
No, you're not being fair to me. You're not being fair to me. And then, no, wait, I'm going to come back now and sit down because you've promised me that you're going to talk about my legacy.
What is your legacy?
I don't know.
So basically,
if you're going to walk out, you got to walk out. You got to make the call. You got to do it.
There was a lot of lingering at the chair,
yes,
wasn't there?
If
you haven't seen the interview, I do recommend watching it. It is pretty interesting, if only to watch one journalist try to kind of get at an issue via multiple kind of questions, a lot of facts, a lot of facts being thrown out, and someone else just saying, well, I didn't know.
I think it's really fascinating because Marianne Jolly actually just, you know, she had all these, like a thick wad of paper in front of her because, you know, she really wanted to make sure she had all of those numbers correct.
Man, she was ready with citations.
Yes, all of those numbers correct, all of those facts correct. Because I think when you're covering something as complex and complicated as what happened here with all of these versions of the story, you need to have at least... You need to grasp whatever truth or fact you can find, right? And in this case, it's the numbers. That's the only piece of, I guess, unquestionable fact there is. Everything else, the whys, the how
even the
they
order
did it,
of events,
the
sometimes.
Order of events sometimes can get confused.
Yes. So, I mean, what we wanted to ask you really was... I guess, were you convinced when you watched it? How did you feel?
And also, why? Why do it?
Yes, exactly. But I assume that the doing it would have been, you know, Najib taking on the interview would have been with the assumption that it would improve his standing somehow. So I would like to hear from you. Did it improve his standing? Is there anything that the man can do at this point that would change the way you feel about him? That number to call is 777-332-900. You can WhatsApp 018-789-8899 and tweet us at BFM Radio. We have gotten messages.
Yes.
With Kalun earlier saying that he was stressed out, he's reached breaking point, and he showed mental fortitude. To last that long, yes. But a number of people are just straight up disagreeing. Delina Kamarudin says, Najib is lying through his teeth. Jim says, if it's for sympathy points from certain groups of Malaysians, then it's a win. With, I guess, the potential angle or headline being foreign news media preying on our ex-PM. Since losing the general election, he has been consistently on this theme to garner sympathy from the masses.
And that might be part of the strategy as well, because you can see the cyber troopers are out in full force talking about who is this white lady to question our former prime minister in that way.
Well, this white lady has been investigating us for a while, you guys. She was investigating us up until she was deported in 2015.
Correct.
Anyway, SH Noralina says, referring to the Najib interview, I noticed that he tilted his head quite often. I think that's not good body language, don't you think? I would say his body language overall wasn't very encouraging.
No.
It was just kind of body language and facial expression, I think, not really matching up. Yvonne says, if anything, the interview would show just how gullible he is. Expensive gifts with no strings attached. The interviewer happens to be a scorned journalist and expects no retribution. He seems to live in a world where these things exist. And then we have got Kalai saying, Najib is responsible for all the accusations under his administration, even if he did not do it. If he denies it, it just shows a lack of responsibility and poor leadership.
So, and I think therein lies the problem with his so-called defense. Throughout the interview, he kept making the point that he had no idea that the money may have come from dubious sources, that he cited various Saudi officials, the Ministry of Finance. He said, you know, I just believed it. Like, you know, they told me it came from there and I went, okay, that's sure. But the problem is, of course, you know, if you are a CEO of a company or if you are on the board of directors, for example, you are culpable for whatever mismanagement happens in that corporation.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
If you're a captain of a ship.
And
yes,
and if, I mean, that's the thing, right? You're the captain of the ship. You should know what are in your logs. You should know what your ship is carrying.
You can't just say, I didn't know.
Someone gave, I thought, okay. Rosalind says, thank you, Najib. You can't masquerade your body language. And and you are not very credible. And also, there was a little bit of a nod towards our name, that tune earlier, which was, of course, Desperado. Fazli Saleh says, I feel the interview just made Najib look more guilty.
Which goes back to the idea or the question of who his PR team are and why are they advising him to do this now?
Yes. And also, did it work? Please keep your thoughts coming. We want to hear from you. I mean, clearly in this room, it didn't exactly work out. We're not super convinced. But if you felt differently, we would very much like hearing from you. That number is 77-332-900. You can also WhatsApp 018-789-8899 and tweet us at BFM Radio. We have got Rees on the line. Good evening, Rees. What are your thoughts?
Hi, guys.
Hi.
Well, basically, I remember there was an interview when back then, I think maybe a couple of years ago, mm-hmm. Howard Stern basically was being interviewed by some journalists, which basically questioned him with those kind of sensitive questions. But Stern reacted. He did seem a bit agitated on the question, but he managed to keep calm and basically go through the questions and eventually showed his quality of a leadership. But whatever happened to Najib, on the other hand, shows that, I guess, he wasn't prepared. Those kind of questions going to be thrown at him at the point in time, I guess. And, yeah, losing out his control, it just shows his quality of leadership there.
Thanks so much for
calling. Thank you so much, Reese. How can you not be prepared?
So Paul actually agrees, Paul on Twitter saying, I cannot imagine anyone able to fluster Mahathir. So there is that comparison, right, between our current and former Prime Minister. William Tan, if Najib can't handle questions from a journalist, how will he fare against questions from a public prosecutor? Coming soon to you in March. Try walking out of a courtroom.
Well, no, and to go back to the question of how you can't be prepared. I mean, you should know by now that any interview that you walk into, there are going to be four things that come up. 1MDB, Altan Tuya, why you lost the election, and Kevin Moraes. People have no answers to that. And they're going to keep asking that question until they get the answers. So any sort of media training would mean that you were prepared with the best possible answers to those questions. But he seemed like he wasn't.
And also, if you agree to do the interview, then that's the expectation.
Exactly.
So keep your thoughts coming. Let us know. What did you think of the interview? Did it help Najib Razak's PR cause? Did it do it harm? 77-332-900 is the number to call. 018-789-8899 is the number to WhatsApp. You can tweet us at BFM Radio. And earlier today, I spoke with Marianne Jolly, the interviewer who spoke to Najib Razak on 101 East. Here's our conversation. What was the initially agreed upon scope for the interview? I mean, it's something that I suppose Najib brought up repeatedly that, oh, this isn't the scope. We're here to talk about the economy. So when you initially reached out, what was the scope that was proposed?
Well, we had conversations about that and we outlined clearly what we wanted to talk about. And that did include his views on the economy, but it also included answering the allegations with regard to 1MDB, answering the allegations with regard to the murders he's been, you know, allegedly linked to, as well as talking about, you know, his current situation and what that's like for him and his family. So it was wide ranging, but it was very clear that we wanted to speak about the allegations made against him about 1MDB.
And were you surprised that he said yes to the interview request?
I guess, yes, I was surprised. I mean, in the sense that I was surprised more than anything because of who, you know, my history with regard to Malaysia and having been deported back in 2015, I thought that maybe he may be reluctant to talk to me, but then I also thought maybe he thought it was a good idea to, if he wanted to really clear the air, to talk to somebody like me, because obviously people would think that he, you know, had nothing to hide. So, yeah, I was surprised, though.
And you mentioned that moment where you were deported from Malaysia back in 2015, which happened while you were pursuing the story of Altan Tuya's murder.
I'm being deported from Malaysia. I'm being escorted by about five customs agents and a man in military outfit.
Did that factor in any way into how you were going to approach this interview?
Not at all, because back then I had no agenda either. All I was trying to do was talk to as many people on all sides of that. On all sides of that case, you know, I met with Razak Baginda. I wanted to talk with him. I had put in requests to speak to the Prime Minister. I'd gone to speak to the Prime Minister's media advisor, trying to get as much information as I possibly can. So I there was no agenda, and certainly with this, I just thought it, you know, it was important. He was obviously posting information on his Facebook. We just wanted to put the allegations to him. We had no agenda.
I have to say that one of the moments that kind of surprised me and I suppose really kind of delighted me was when you asked him directly why he deported you. Were you always planning to ask him that, or did it just kind of come up?
No, I did want to ask him that. I had thought about asking him that because, I mean, he was talking about it being an open, democratic country under his leadership. And to actually understand, and I thought maybe there was a real reason why he had me deported. I wanted to understand what it really was.
I was deported from Malaysia in June 2015 while filming a story about the murder of Alton Tuyu Charabu. Why did you have me deported from
Good
this
thing
country?
We deported you. You're a nuisance. Because as far as I'm concerned, making lies, fabricating lies, is not something that we want to tolerate in this country.
But I wasn't fabricating lies. I was actually seeking an interview with you. I have no political agenda in this country. I was just trying to understand what the truth was.
The way you've been asking is as though in your mind I was already involved.
So, and I thought of, you know, why was I deported? If there wasn't, you know, how could I possibly be a national security risk when I was trying to get information from all sides of the case?
And as the interview progressed, I mean, what was your read of the situation and how did you feel at the time? Because as a viewer, there was sort of a growing, palpable sense of tension.
Well, I mean, I guess initially, when we first started, I actually imagined that it may have started differently to what it did. I thought we would have more time to lead into the 1MDB case, but in actual fact, Mr. Najib brought the transfers of money into his account. He brought that up virtually straight away.
The main point was that I returned more than $620 million back. You know, they kept on accusing me of receiving a huge sum of money, but they forgot to mention that the bulk of the money was returned 4 months after the general election.
But Mr. Najib, just going to your...
So right from the very beginning, we were focused on 1MDB, and it seemed I had to follow that. You never know how an interview is going to go. You have to respond to what the person raises, and that came up very quickly. And then he put, you know, he said it was from a Saudi prince, and then I had to, I felt, you know, as a journalist, I wanted to put the allegations made in the United States Department of Justice report to him to give him the right of reply to those.
After the interview, I mean, we've seen some responses come out from Najib in the press, him saying that, oh, you know, he was concerned for his wife, his children, things like that. Have you had any direct response from Najib or anyone from the current or former government of Malaysia?
No, we haven't. We've just seen the response that they put out soon after the interview where they claimed that we hadn't, you know, been clear about what the interview was going to be about. But no, I haven't heard anything more from his people or him.
And speaking, I suppose, as a Malaysian journalist, here we are quite accustomed to receiving requests from people in power, whatever power that may be, for, I suppose, a more positive edit, a more positive spin. Did you receive any such request at all?
Well, in our conversations with them, they were keen to, you know, for Mr. Najib to talk about the economy and to also give his assessment of the current government, and, you know, we were prepared to, you know, allow him to do that, but also challenge that. So, I didn't feel overly pressured about that. Mm-hmm. They seemed to be willing to, you know, answer the allegations about 1MDB and also about the murders.
And the moment that got highlighted, I suppose, has been when Najib wanted to walk out of the interview when you repeatedly asked him about 1MDB, Joe Lowe, Alton Tuya, etc.
You've spent so much of this time. Otherwise, I'm going to walk out.
Okay, just one thing.
No more, please.
You know, many people say...
No more, all right.
Okay.
That's it.
Listen, okay.
If you want to talk about economy, I'll sit down.
Well, we can talk about...
Come on, you're not being fair to me. No, if you want to ask about the economy, what
I mean, you are facing serious charges in this country, and people.
Look, I've done my part.
No, I'm not going to stand anymore.
If you want to ask about the economy, I'll talk to you.
Okay, we'll ask about. Let's talk. Given what's happened to you, let's talk about your legacy.
Okay,
as we'll talk about a legacy. I'm fine.
Were you anticipating such a response?
No, I wasn't. And also when we were talking, it sort of came quite suddenly. I think his mind, you know, his assistants were becoming concerned about what, you know, about the interview and the way it was going. So I think there were people perhaps suggesting to him that he should end the interview. It did come quite suddenly, I guess. In a sense, I kind of expected him to be prepared for what we were asking, and I don't necessarily think he was.
Since then, he's also claimed that the reason why he wanted to walk out of the interview was because he felt that it wasn't being fair to him and to his side. Would you care to respond to that?
Well, I mean, all we were putting are the allegations that have been made against him and giving him the opportunity to respond to those allegations in a very detailed way. So we were giving him a lot of opportunity. So I really can't understand why it wasn't fair.
Right.
He was saying what he thought, and I was questioning some of that. And that's what you do as a journalist. And I would have imagined that that's what he would have expected.
In retrospect, would you have approached the time that you were given with him, that interview, any differently at all? Or would you say that was what was done, that was what I wanted out of it, or, you know, that was the approach I would have taken?
Oh, look, it's always very tricky. I mean, to do an interview like that when you've got a limited amount of time on such a complex subject, particularly when it's for an audience that may not know the intricacies of that subject. So you have to respond to what happens in the moment, in a sense. Like, as I said, he brought up the transfer of money very early on. I would have liked a bit more background to how the 1MDB Petro-Saudi deal came about, all of that, so we could have given him an opportunity to explain all of that. But suddenly you're right in the middle of this incredibly complex subject. So, yeah, I don't know. I mean, maybe if it's hard to say. I mean, you just got to go with the way in which the interview flows, really. And that could be different the next time we spoke to one another. So it's one of those things, I guess. There's lots of things I could have done differently, but, you are responding in the moment.
That was my conversation with journalist Marianne Jolly, who interviewed Najib on Al Jazeera's 101 East. You can catch the episode tomorrow at 6:30 a.m. as well as 4:30 p.m. Or you could always head to their website to catch the video. That's aljazeera.com/programs101East.
Just very quickly, Lynn, I just wanted to say right now, as of a few minutes ago on Najib Razak's Instagram, while you were speaking to Marianne Jolly, is a picture of his cat. I'm not joking. And the caption, Kiki tengah tunggu nak makan malam. So, life goes on.
Yeah. I mean, there's nothing more prosaic, I suppose, than a picture of a cat waiting for dinner.
Feed Kiki.
Yeah. We've had a number of messages that have come in, really quite a bit. John Lim saying, it was a masterpiece demonstration of tantrum throwing. Agreed. He has done more to undermine his own position and credibility than anyone else. What did he expect them to talk about? The weather? and then Joanne says, it took a lot of courage to tell Marianne to her face that you were a nuisance. I'm not a Najib supporter, but just think this should be given some credit. What baffles me, though, though, is why agree to this interview in the first place?
I don't know, Joanne. I think it's just, it's a really silly strategy to call the journalist that you are interviewing a nuisance. I mean, it really puts you in the wrong footing. I mean, no amount of media training would ever tell you to do that, especially when you're on the downside of that conversation.
Yeah, I mean, he is also our former prime minister, so there is a power thing there. Yes. Where she isn't necessarily in the position of power. I mean, he once had the power to deport her.
Correct.
So being able to tell her to her face, you're a nuisance, isn't exactly... I don't think it was a very difficult stretch for him. Mm. We've got Edward, who says, if you tell the truth, you don't have to remember anything. I'm pretty sure the lawyers are now advising him no more interviews. Roy says, assuming doesn't absolve you from responsibility, it makes an ass out of you and me. His sitting posture, lack of conviction in the responses, and finally, outbursts shows a lack of mental fortitude. The interviewer had every right to ask what she did, even the deportation question. No blaming her for bullying him. She asked pertinent questions, he lashed out. So to say she is biased, there is no evidence of this in the interview.
No, I think so. I think often politicians will put things in the context of bias, especially when the journalist is asking questions that they don't like. And that's been a common trope or rhetoric that's used throughout foreign journalists trying to bring down this government. Mm-hmm. They have a political agenda. They want to tear me down. It's a personal vendetta. I think all of these are just very, very common tropes and common defense points that people go back to.
So we've been asking you for your messages and your thoughts, basically. What do you think of the interview? I mean, did it help or harm Najib Razak's PR cause? Because while we wait for the court case, I suppose, all of it is really just a PR game at this point.
Yeah, it is. And that's what was most fascinating for me, right? In the sense that when you're facing 35 or 37 charges, I've lost track now, maybe you don't want to put yourself in a situation where you could implicate yourself.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if you're just going to say, I don't know, I suppose you are not implicating yourself.
I suppose. But there were moments when, you know, Marianne Jolly was asking about Joe Lowe and he was close. It felt like he was close.
So we've been asking you to call us 7733 2900, WhatsApp us 018-789-8899, and tweet us at BFM Radio. We have got Rachel on the line. Good evening, Rachel. What are your thoughts?
Hi, good evening. I have a couple of thoughts related to some questions you guys mentioned earlier about how, like, you know, you guys were wondering out loud, like, you know, why did he go on in
why?
The first
yes.
place? Who, what were his PR people thinking? And, you know, I figured that, you know, maybe they figured Al Jazeera was big, but also not like, a European news agency, so they might be a little more favorable to him, or at least a little more neutral.
Right.
Maybe, you know, that, you know, because, you know, the so-called Western media has definitely not painted him in any sort of charitable light.
Right.
and then the other, I think earlier you guys were asking, like, you know, like, is there any possibility that, you know, that anything he could do at this point to change people's opinions about him? A confession? Maybe? You know?
I don't think we're close to that.
or he could tell us where Joe Lowe is. That would also be
right.
That would also go a long way. Because I think at this point, like you said, at this point, it's a PR game because we're all sitting in the court case. And the thing is that things like the interview... they feel more like they're not going to change the minds of anyone who's already against him. They're just intended more to bolster more support for those who are already with him.
Right.
Or perhaps undecided, you know.
I don't know if there's anyone left undecided.
Maybe someone who hasn't heard the news?
Maybe. Thank you very much, Rachel. Because it feels like that situation where you're either for or against, right?
Speaking of, we have had some messages of people who I wouldn't say are necessarily for, but didn't enjoy the interview. So Vinayan says, let's give Najib a break. The Al Jazeera lady wasn't fair to him. Let the courts decide. We do not need a public trial.
So I don't think a journalist asking questions is necessarily a public trial. A journalist is doing their job when they ask such questions, right? And I think it is our role as the media to be antagonistic to those in power.
Miza says, we don't really know what the real communication was between Al Jazeera and Najib. He might be corrupt, but I don't think he's stupid. And the reporter shouldn't be biased. She kept asking repeated questions, even though he already answered, I don't know, and I assume. So I don't think any of them are on the right side. And since everyone wants to compare to Tun, Tun also always answered when it's about Anwar. I don't know, go ask him. They are politicians first. They always twist everything. And I mean, I'm not going to question the politician note, but when it comes to reporters and yes. what you're supposed to do, you are supposed to ask those questions because you didn't get the answer you needed.
I don't know, and I assume is not a good enough answer. So we keep asking those questions until you get an answer, right? Either way, I don't know.
Or you get a walkout.
Or you get a walkout. It's a lot of fun.
Let's see what Victor has to say. Good evening, Victor. What are your thoughts?
Good evening, Lynn and Uma.
Hello.
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 Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, we Victor. Can.
As far as I'm concerned, hello?
Yes, carry on.
Okay, actually, I'm just wondering why he agreed to do the interview, but it could be that since the time of President Trump, I think we have this thing called post-truth, isn't it? Whereby yes. objective truth is not so important as this emotional. So maybe he believed that those people who always believe in him will always believe in him, and those who don't. So maybe he hoped that he can come out a winner, but I don't see how. But I'm thinking that if I am this the interviewer, maybe not only would he walk off, he might even hit me if I ask him. if I ask him this. President Lincoln told us that you can fool all the people some of the time. You can fool some people all the time, but you cannot fool all the people all the time. What do you say to this, Mr. Najib? I think you'll hit me. You'll hit me then.
Wow, Victor, thank you very much for, you know, we missed your quotes. I have to say.
That would have been good TV. I would have watched that. Aaron says, based on all the nonsense our BN ministers have said throughout the years and the latest Najib fiasco, a first-year PR student would have done a better job as their advisor. On second thought, do they even have a PR advisor? Or is the PR advisor actually secretly affiliated to our current government? Hashtag 5D chess.
Dang, dang, dang.
Who knows? Let's see if Kidder has something to say. Kidder, what are your thoughts?
Hello.
Hi.
Okay, I would like to comment on the interview, especially the interviewer. You know, I think some people are opining that the reporter failed in her mission. And, you know, I believe a lot of people would agree with me on this. Well, I think, you know, a journalist is someone who knows the difference between asking questions and badgering the newsmaker, you know. And I think, you know, getting your newsmaker to walk out from an interview session is never a win. It is, I don't know, it is just unnecessary. Don't you agree with me?
To be fair, I think she tried her level best to keep him there because she kept going, all right, no, well, let's talk about this. Let's. And I think her follow-up questions were kind of engineered to try and keep him in the room.
Yeah, but I don't know why. But you know, from me as a viewer, I think it's obvious the reporter failed in her mission. I mean, like when I watch it, I be like, oh God, she's no Barbara Walters.
We went to Barbara Walters, all right.
Well, that's all.
No, thank you very much for your call.
I
agree. As a reporter, your primary mission is to keep. Your guest or your interviewee in the seat and answering as many questions as possible.
But it's about the story, I suppose.
It's about the story, right? And I don't think, and you know, Lynn, you spoke to her earlier on, and from her responses, she seemed genuinely interested in trying to get answers to these questions. I don't think her strategy, and I'm giving her the benefit of the doubt, I don't think her strategy was to create drama.
No, I don't think so.
Because the way she structured her questions as well, if you listen to the interview, it didn't feel like a gotcha method to kind of put someone at ill ease, right? It was more a question of, could you please tell me? I'm perplexed as to the look of her face, her facial expressions. There was this abject horror, as in, is that what you're saying? Are you answering it in this way?
And he was, or rather he wasn't, more often than not. Let's see what Joe has to say. Good evening, Joe. What are your thoughts?
Good evening, guys.
Hi.
I think everyone has kind of echoed whatever I had in my mind. And just to go back on the last caller.
Sure.
I think it wasn't a failed interview because as a journalist, what you can do is ask and, you know, inquire. And it really, I mean, I have this golden rule. There are no questions. There are no dumb questions. There are only dumb answers.
Right.
So how it was replied just made him look bad. And honestly, I don't know. Maybe I have a different take from everyone else. But watching the interview was watching, like, you know, one of those viral internet makeup videos when women strip off their makeup just to show the real selves. So this is what happens when you don't have state-run media, when you don't have the power to issue advisories to edit.
Yeah.
That's what happens. So it's a totally stripped and honest interview with no influences. Right now, I'm just perplexed that people are actually sympathizing with him because it was really stupid answers. He had the chance to make himself look good, to at least have a human approach to it that anyone could sympathize with him, at least, you know, whatever excuses he came about with his worry for his wife and his children,
right,
being taken to the UCC, could have been echoed during the interview. But no, he decided to say it post. So it just looks like a justification. It was just a bad makeup video. You know, you stripped everything off and it was just your ugliness.
I get it. Joe, I'm gonna steal that, Joe. I think that's a great line. Bad makeup video.
And having said that, someone should have given him some makeup because he looked so haggard. This is a bit bimbo. This is a bit blonde of me. But going by looks, he looked very disheveled. He looked like he just came from under a bridge. I mean, I thought there would be more PR-savvy people behind him.
Yeah.
To actually, I mean, for you to take on that interview, you must have prepared something to make you look really, really good.
Yeah.
I didn't see any of it.
Yeah, fair enough. I mean, it is television after all. Joe, thank you so much for calling. We've had Leslie who weighed in saying, be fair, Marianne, BFM 89.9. I really want to steal that. That would be excellent. And we have got another message from Kevin who says, with this latest interview, 2018 is officially the year of Schadenfreude. Thank you, universe.
Wow.
I mean, we are still talking about it. So there is some measure of delight. But I don't think it's necessarily in the misery of others. It's more in, wow, that happened.
You know, we've received a little bit of response throughout the day as to people questioning why this is news. I mean, are we just not giving him unnecessary airtime by still talking about it? And because we are, that he somehow actually won, right? I disagree. I don't buy the notion that all publicity is good publicity. I think in situations like this, when you're facing down legal charges, when you're facing down an attack on your entire legacy and reputation, you need to put yourself out there in the best possible light. Like our previous caller said, like Rachel said, you know, maybe if he had just shown his phone and gone, here, these are the WhatsApps from Joe Lo, this is where he is, then maybe people would come to terms with forgiving him a little bit.
We have got Raymond on the line. Good evening, Raymond. Thanks for holding. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I personally thought that this whole PR gig was really a success for Najib.
Why so?
And you see, before the interview, and he's probably one of the most hated person in Malaysia. And after the interview, look what happened. And you guys actually did a session on this, you know, and if you listen to the interview, those questions that's thrown at him are all the old stale questions that we have heard over and over again.
True, and, but we still don't have answers to those questions.
Yeah, and you see, and Lynn, you mentioned that, you know, there's a job of a reporter that, you know, if you don't get your answer, you keep repeating the questions. But Najib bin Najib, he's going to give you the answer, and his answer is no. And if you're expecting a different answer, or if you are expecting a yes from him, then I think it's unfair to him because that is a question, there's an answer that you want.
Fair enough, Raymond. But I think what we're asking about now is whether or not at the end of it, does he come off looking okay? And I'm not sure that he did. I mean, he may be satisfied with the fact that he didn't say anything, but I'm not sure that everyone else looks at that interview and goes, oh, I trust him more now.
No, it's not about, you know, we are not talking about whether he can be trusted or not. You know, it's just that the whole PR thing, first of all, is like, you know, he will not go walk into the interview knowing that what's going to throw at him, you know.
Right.
He deported this woman and he would expect something that's very vicious that's coming against towards him. And you know, and he took on the jab, and you know, and he was like, I hold the game right now, you know, I can walk out from the interview, but you can't. And now I take this opportunity to gain some sympathy points, you
but,
know.
Raymond, I have a question for you, and it's just a casual question. Do you think it is a journalist's responsibility to be fair to the interviewer? Especially there's a power difference.
I felt that, I think that, you know, in a certain degree, the question should be structured in a way that it should be a certain level of fairness towards both parties.
Right.
You know, but right now, you know, the way I look at it is when I watched that interview, I felt that she's coming back with a vengeance. You know, it's the same repeating same old question again, you know.
Yeah, no, and you're not the only one, Raymond. Thank you very much for your call. Actually, a lot of people have felt that way, that, you know, that it was just beating the same old drum, and therefore Najib Razak handled it in the best possible way and said, why are you still asking me this stuff?
This is one of those things, I think, where we're just going to have to agree to disagree.
Right.
We are heading to the news now. This is the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my. BFM 89.9, the business station.